Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Elizabeth. And I'm from Kaneohe, Hawaii. My home group is Friday Night Palolo Speaker Discussion Group on the island of Oahu. I also want to take this moment to let you folks know that it's my incredible honor and privilege to serve currently as the Panel 59 delegate from Area 17, Hawaii. So eternally grateful. Also want to let you guys know that I lost my voice because I've been screaming every time I see someone I know. Lack of sleep is my dilemma. I want to let you guys know that this meeting, the title of this workshop today is called Service, Gratitude Made Visible. My program says Service, Gratitude Made Visible. So you could flip the words around if you want. So I'd like to ask for a moment of silence in gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 75 years. This afternoon we have three speakers here with us today to talk about service, gratitude made visible, or gratitude, service made visible, as someone just mentioned. I'll introduce all three speakers at this time. We have Paula from Illinois. We have Scott from Ohio. And last but certainly not least, we have Marshall from South Carolina. When I got the letter to chair this workshop, I saw the topic, and my eyes immediately filled with tears. And I just want to tell you that service is the hugest thing in my recovery, apart from finding a God of my own understanding. And service enhances my spirituality, enhances my sobriety. And I know that for me, serving AA is not an obligation. It's a privilege. And so without further ado, let's hear from Paula.
Hello, everyone. I'm Paula, and I'm an alcoholic. Due to sponsorship, she's here today. The steps and a belief that hope never goes away. I've been sober since October 29th, 1979. When I got the letter, which Dean put me in for, I had my husband open it because I had two fears. One was that it would be the big Saturday or the Friday night thing, which I said to Dean, I'll do it, but do not put my name in for those big meetings. And he kept joking, though, that he did. So I had my husband open the letter, and when it said Saturday, I froze. I said, keep reading. And it said 3:30. I knew I was okay. And then so it took care of my first fear. My bigger and second fear was that the topic would be humility, because it'd be a quick meeting. So, I don't know. I'm grateful there's no mirrors here. But anyway, God, that's way too honest. But anyway, so I'm going to say a little bit about the things that I do in service, right? But I'm sure we can all list things. You know, many of us can list things. But really, what's more important to me are the people that I see who do service and what it's done for me to see the people in the service that they do. I take a meeting into the jail, a meeting into the women's jail. And of all the meetings I've taken in there, not one woman has said that she thinks she's an alcoholic. You know, never once. It's always a good meeting for me, and I have this odd response when I'm leaving there. I never want to leave them there. You know, you'd think I'd be hardened, like they need to pay the price. I'm not. It kind of breaks my heart, really, to leave them there. And one woman I met, you know, the stories you hear. One woman that I met that I took a meeting into, she was 21. She had five children at 21. And her oldest child was six, and he had severe special needs because of her drinking while she was pregnant with him. And here's the painful part. She knew it. You know, she knew it. And then another time, Champagne's not that big, you know, but so when news hits, it's a big deal to us. And sometime this year, a woman in her 50s had been going drunk, very drunk, had been going the wrong way on the interstate, hit a car, killed the young woman in the car, and who the young woman was a bride-to-be who had just left from buying her wedding dress. But here's the odd response. Me, an alcoholic, I read it, and I'm angry with this woman for driving drunk. I'm angry with this woman for driving drunk. And then quickly I thought, wait a minute. That's not, you know. And then I take a meeting in a jail, and there she is. You know? Here's what she said when it was her turn to share. She said, I wish it was me who died. And I'll bet she does. I'll bet she does. That's some of the service I get just from the little things that I do. I give up one Monday, 1 hour of a Monday once a month. And those are the stories that will never leave me from going into there. And I go in there now, you know, once a month. Some of the things I do, we have a little convention, conference, it's one day, I don't know what you'd call it, called Soberfest, and it's my responsibility to bring in the speakers, and, you know, it's always great, and I've been on, you know, if you're new, this may be information you don't need yet, but there's some committees that just don't work out. None of anyone in this room, I'm sure, but, and there's some committees who really work out. I mean, you can just tell the Spirit of God is there. And it does not have, you know, you'd think that the difference would be like there's people who want power and they won't back off or whatever that is. That's not the difference. I mean, I was the same person, right, in the not one that didn't work and in the Soberfest that really works. And it's the spiritual thing for me to be in these Soberfest meetings because the three of us on that committee are like real, they got to be done this way, you know, and here's a good idea. And like we're always changing the rules, you know. I always want to oversell the tickets because you make more money that way. Why wouldn't you do that? And I want to charge for coffee. And then the Nob's going to bring that up to me later. I already know. But anyway, and then the people who are in charge of the like the treasury and the you know, the registration, they're very rule oriented people, and that is not who I would be. And so I'm always calling them with, okay, so I oversold table 4, but it's okay because they're only going to be there an hour, right? Table 4 will be there, and we're going to let them work. We make all this money, you know, and these poor men, you know, they're so kind. They live in a small little town in Illinois. If you were from there, you'd know what that means. And they're just always so patient, you know. And if I could say any reason why does this committee work when others don't, it's because of the patience. Because there's always one. All it takes is one person who's kind and patient. And I have that on this committee because I am the same person on the committee who didn't work and the one who worked. But there was a kind and patient gentleman on the committee that works. I sponsor 11 women, and my sponsors, last I counted, 28, I believe, from the couple new ones that came in. And it sounds like a lot. Doesn't it sound like impossible? I remember when I sponsored 4, and that seemed like too much. But they don't all go crazy at the same time. And so that's helpful. And it's great because I seem to travel a lot, but it's because I'm a point whore, basically, you know, so I travel for free. But that's probably a bad word to be, anyway, so whatever. So what's Doris doing? I'm okay. She said she'd start making rude gestures if I messed up. But followed closely by Jeannie. But anyway, so yeah, so I travel a lot. And then it's cool because I make a community of my sponsors. We get together for potluck at my house, and we have meetings, and they can see each other, right? And they're on the same listserv. And so when I'm gone, they can, you know, and they can't reach me, they can care for each other. And it's created a whole other family for them. At every international, my best friend, Jackie, well, I'm her best friend. She's just somebody I hang out with every once in a while. But keeps her humble. But I think that's what that means. But we volunteer at the International every year. So this is our third one that we've gone to, and the third one that we've done some kind of little volunteer function for. And the first one we volunteered was Minneapolis. And what our job was there was to seat at the big Saturday night meeting to seat the handicapped alcoholics. Now, let me tell you this. It was a lot of work because there were a shocking amount of alcoholics who needed really detailed help to get to their special seating, right? Many. We worked very hard, and that there was, she helped too. There were a lot of it. I was sweating, which is rare for me. I'm not making a joke. I'm not going any further than that. But so all these people needed really important help to get the special closer seats, right, because of their handicap. But then the meeting ended, and we all go back to help these poor, frail people. There wasn't one of them left. It was a miracle that occurred at the big meeting at International. They couldn't walk. Now they can walk. I did not watch the time at all, so it's on you. Okay, all right. But so those are just some of the service things that I do. But mostly what I've learned from service is watching others, to see what others do. And it's, I'll just say some of these things of these people who have done amazing things that I've been lucky enough to witness. There's this one guy who's been sober a long time, 31, I guess, Jimmy A. in our town. And one committee I was on was to bring the area meeting into our town, and my job was to fill the panels, get all the people, you know, on all the panels. And so I called Jimmy. He sponsors a lot of guys, and I said, "Hey, Jimmy, do you think you'd sit on one of these panels for us?" And he says, "And if that's ever been your job, it's the hardest ones are the 11 p.m. and the 6 a.m. You know, nobody wants those. Y'all do it at noon, Paula." And I'm like, "Well, I have 10 doing that already, but whatever." So I said, "Hey, Jimmy, do you think you can do a panel?" Here's this man with 30 years of sobriety. He said, "What's your hardest slot to fill?" I said, "Well, 11 and 6. He says, "I'll take one of those, and you can sign three of my sponsees up for the other ones." That's something. 30 years of sobriety. I mean, his job is, you know, he's done his bit. You know what I'm saying? And then at Soberfest, you know, a big thing is set up, right? It's a big deal. And so we needed people to get there early, like 7 in the morning, start taking chairs and moving tables. You know how all that works. And so I was hosting two speakers. And so I got there a little, you know, later. And I get there, and we're still there kind of early to start set up tables. And Jackie spoke and set up tables. How about that? But so I get there, and it's like 7:30 in the morning. Here's Jimmy A., with 30 years of sobriety, moving tables and chairs. I mean, that was impressive, you know? And I have too many examples and not much time. Another thing that happened is when up till I was about 10 years sober, I had this crazy, crazy, weird thing about putting money in the basket. It's insane. I was given my life and had other things to spend that dollar on. I mean, it makes no sense to me now, but whatever. So the basket, you know, would pass, and I'd pretend I didn't have any or whatever. And you're laughing at, yeah, you mean it, you know. So, Dylan, know how much when I get to have. Okay, thanks. So I'm at a meeting. I used to live in Savannah, Georgia. So I'm going to meet. I'm sitting next to this guy, Butch. And the basket goes past me, and he says, then it goes to him. He says, "Paul, aren't you going to put money in?" I went, "Woo." I said, "Well, you know, I don't have any, or, you know, got change for 100. And and here's what he did. He took three $1 bills out of his pocket, and he goes, "This is for me, this one's for you, and this one's for the guy who's not here yet." And I have never, never let a basket go past me. But I have teenagers, so it's hard to hold on to cash. You know what I mean? Isn't it crazy? But, you should take credit cards. No, never mind. But, anyway. So when I don't have cash, I put more cash in the next time. And another thing Butch used to do is he used to bring donuts into every meeting he came into. And one time I asked him, I said, that's really nice. Why do you, you know, do that every time? And he said, because one of the founding members of Alcoholics Anonymous in Savannah, Georgia, was this guy named Don. When he started going to meetings, there was like maybe 4 people in an AA meeting, you know, way back. And he said, "Why I bring donuts is because Don had been a homeless man. And the only reason he came to AA is because there were donuts here." So Butch always brought donuts because of Don. And Don was a homeless man, loved the donuts, heard AA, and stayed, and became one of the founding members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, later on, Don had cancer. And sober 30-something years, a long time. And so I went up to see him in his room. And there was always somebody from AA, if not many people from AA, in his room. Now, he was dying. There was absolutely no hope that he was dying of cancer. So I went in, and I said, "Hey, Don, you know, how you doing?" And here's what he said to me. He said, "Well, I made it sober." And his death served me. Do you know? And ever since then, I was probably 10 years, that was 20 years ago. I didn't know it, but the minute he said that, that became my goal. That's what I want to say. Well, I made it sober. You know? What a goal. What a beautiful grace he had. But that's all he had to say, like, oh, I'm dying or whatever. But he went out that way, right? About 10 years ago or something, or more, I can't remember, 10 or so, my mother died, and I lost a baby at the same time. I mean, life continues to go on, right? You know, just because we're so, we don't get a free pass. And I had a home group, the Thursday Night Unity group, and we were really close. You know, it's one of, you know, every once in a while you find a great group like that. And I was blind. I couldn't get out of bed. I just couldn't get out of bed. And the only thing that could serve me was I had read the big book so much, so lines of it could come into my mind and stop the insanity. And that's the point of reading the big book, though I believe this is not a big book topic. But so I couldn't get out of bed, and what I realized, I didn't want to drink. I didn't, you know, I wasn't thinking about drinking, and I'd always judged people harshly who had tragedy and then drank. I would think, you fool, you know, you just made it worse. How could you, what are you doing? But lying in that bed and not being able to get out of it, I got compassion for those people who slipped, because I realized the point was, it wasn't to feel better, it was to feel nothing. And I could understand that. And I remember I got out of bed, and I went to my home group, because that's what you do. You just go to your home group. And I remember, and here's what I shared that night, that what I had just gone through, and that, you know, that I finally understood how it is that sometimes people drink in tragedy. And this man spoke, his name's Dave, and he said, Paula, I have a mother I love dearly, and I don't know what I'm going to do when she dies. I need you to stay sober, so I can have a sober example of what to do when I lose my mother. So I stayed sober. And here's the funny thing. I didn't even like that guy. But someone in Alcoholics Anonymous required something of me. So there it goes. Now, I'm going to talk about a couple of people who didn't make it, because they served me too. There was a guy, Pat, sober forever in this tiny little town in Nebraska. He was the man. He worked out of a second edition. He was the man. He took Jackie and I to meetings, and great man. But he always had a resentment, this one resentment, and he always had a secret based on something he did or saw during World War II. And he told me he would never tell anyone what that was. He said, I have one secret I'll never tell. And he would tell about that resentment he'd had from his first year of sobriety, still 32 years later, in detail. So Jack and I moved to Savannah, and we got word that Pat had started drinking. And I told Jackie, and she said, you know what it was? It was that resentment. And I said, you know what it was? It was that secret. But whatever it was, I don't want any of that. It took that man down, drank for a year, and died. Another man we have in our hometown is named Danny. He was the man in AA, man. He had this beautiful tonation to his voice. You know what I mean? But it worked. And so he had, I don't remember how long, 20, something more, 21, 22 years. And he drank. He was at my first wedding. He paid for my reception. I got married at the courthouse, so he had a bunch of quarters. But that was Danny, man. He's a great guy. And he started drinking. And I think still some of us are like, what? I mean, it's 4 years ago or more. And so he'll be sober, mate, 2 weeks, a month, and then he'll disappear. And he'll be sober 2 weeks, a month, and then he'll disappear. And I still can't put my finger on it. What is that that took him down? What is that? All I know for sure is it was alcohol. That's all I know. It's the best I know. Thanks. So if there's such thing as a D list of circuit speakers, that's what I'm on. And I want to stay right there. I like that, way down. And if that's ever a place where you are, what will get you kicked right on off that list of approved speakers is if you talk about two things, drugs or suicide. However, So I spoke. I had the honor to speak at the International Women's Conference in February in Orlando. And I don't know what made me do it. I never talk about it. I never do, but I did. And I talked about how drinking, right from the minute I stopped drinking, it no longer became an option. But suicide was an option. And it was a painfully long time into my sobriety where it stopped becoming an option. And it's embarrassing to say, but it's true. And I felt I had to say that at that meeting. And there's a lot of these 1,800 women. And so afterwards, you know how when you speak, everybody lines up, you know, and you shake their hands. And so toward the end of that line, a woman shook my hand and thanked me for speaking. And she said, "I'm so glad you said that, because last night I decided to kill myself. But my best friend had talked me into going to one more meeting." And that's the meeting she went to. And I mean, twice in all my sobriety had I talked about that. And the time before that, I'd asked my sponsor's permission. It was at another women's anniversary meeting. So is that something? Isn't that the point? Isn't that the point? Okay, one more thing, and I'll shut up. I have 1 minute. Oh, hate that. I have Tourette's. It's hard for me. So I started drinking when I was 14 and immediately was court mandated to go to AA meetings. And my mom had sobered up 2 years before. This is a small town in Nebraska. So my mom would go to meetings and people loved her. And she was really nice. And she talked about, you know, her horrible teenage daughter who was trying to kill her. Seriously, I made a homemade fire bomb, you know, Lysol and a Bic lighter. And how'd you like that in your first year of sobriety? Isn't that lovely? But so she'd go to meetings and talk about her horrible teenage daughter, which, you know, frankly, I have to be honest, I was. And so then I was court mandated to go to those meetings where she would say about these things. And so I was ready for the battle. You know, you'd go in, you know, armed and ready. And dang, these people weren't nice. Consistently kind. When I didn't, like, I'd sit back there and go... Somebody just said, "I still do that." My sponsor is here, Doris. I do not appreciate this honesty. But these people kept being nice. So when I was 7, I've been sober since I was 17. So when I was 17 and finally got sober and had to, like, really go to AA meetings and not go like that and smoke pot beforehand, I have two rules. Boom, boom. All I could remember to quell the fear was that AA people are nice. AA people are nice. AA people are nice, right? Because that's what they did for me. Against all human nature, that's what they did for me. They were kind, so I could remember that they are kind, and I can enter that place. Now, in thinking about this subject that I'm supposed to talk about, service, colon. Colon's an underused punctuation, I realized. I was going to talk about the colon, but my sponsor is going to be here, so whatever. So, it's an underappreciated punctuation mark. I've decided it needs therapy. But anyway, so, wait, what is it? It's service, colon, gratitude made visible. Thank you. Jackie keeps doing the focus thing. So, so I was thinking, well, do I do service because I'm grateful? You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Is that what that is? And I guess it is. It's just a thing. If I have, of course I'm going to do it. Plus it puts me in the middle of the pack and I'm safe in here, right? So here's my thing about gratitude, and then I will shut up, is to me, gratitude is the greatest weapon we have in our arsenal. It will work when all things fail. So I began at 20 years of sobriety, making myself wake up, and the first words out of my mouth are this: "Thank you, God, for breath." Because no matter what, that's always true. And when I begin from there, everything else, all the service that I do, the service that I have the honor to do, it all just comes naturally. Thank you.
And next, we have Scott from Ohio.
Everybody, I'm Scott. I'm an alcoholic. That better, I hope. Well, I wasn't really sure how to go about this topic either when I was notified via email. You can't hear me? Okay. Is that better? When I got the email, I wasn't sure if I was actually coming here yet. I registered back in September, you know, as soon as it opened up, thinking I could cancel if I had to. So I wanted to make sure I got in, got the hotel, didn't do the plane reservation at the time. So, but I didn't know until a couple days after the deadline to notify the committee here that I could do this. I just didn't know at the time. I let them know 2 or 3 days later, thinking that was legitimate, not knowing, but I hope I'm off the hook. But I wasn't. So here I am. And my sponsor is here, too, so there will be less embellishment. Huh, Bill? So anyway, I wasn't really sure how to approach this topic, so I just got to thinking about some of the experiences that I have had in service over the years and some of the examples that I had of people that, to me, no question about their sincerity and gratitude for this program. That's part of what attracted me to this, to doing some service work. But I certainly didn't get into service work to show my gratitude, because I didn't have any much at the time, actually. My first couple service positions, I was told to do them. There were no elections. There was no saying no either. There was just, you're going to be secretary of our home group at about a year sober. So I did. And that was a long time ago. My sobriety date, September 23rd, 1983. And about a year after that is when they said that I was going to be secretary of my home group. And it was an okay position. And then they eventually made me a GSR of that group, too. That was not an elected position either. That was an appointed position, which I found out later. Not everybody does it that way. Who knew? Thing was, though, at that group, at that time, it was a much different home group atmosphere than the one I have today. Our group, as I see it now, we just weren't very informed about service positions, about even what a GSR does. The district wasn't even active, as a matter of fact. So there weren't really even district meetings. I went to some of our assemblies, I think. I don't even remember much about it, to tell you the truth, because I didn't have hardly anybody at the time to show me how to do the job. So I just did my first jobs because they said to. But it was a start. And then gentleman who eventually became my sponsor way back when had been active in service in 2 or 3 different capacities by this time. And so he was one of those, and still is actually, one of those guys who he'll do anything, anytime, any amount of time for Alcoholics Anonymous, whenever he's asked. And with a good attitude. It's just the part I sometimes lack. But he said, I want you to come to a meeting with me Sunday. Had no idea what it was. Many of you have been there before. Just because he was my sponsor, I went. But he couldn't make it. He called me earlier that morning. He was out of town, and his car broke down. He couldn't get to the meeting. But he said, but you still need to go, he said, because I want you to put my name in the hat for something he said was a DCM for District 24 at the time. I didn't know what that meant, but I did do that. I don't even know what kind of meeting it was. I had no idea. Some kind of, but I put his name. Anyway, to make the long story short there, he ended up being elected district committee member, and I became his alternate. Still not all that grateful, but that part's coming. That was a different story, though, regarding service for me, because now I had a really good example of somebody to learn from, and I'm an alternate, so, you know, it's an excellent position to be in to learn a job. So, about that time, things are starting to kind of fall apart in my family life. There's a separation and divorce coming, and I got three little kids, and it was devastating to me. And coincidentally, my sponsor, the DCM, had just gone through a really similar situation about 6 months before. I mean, surprisingly similar. So doing these jobs, these service jobs, those earlier service jobs did a lot for me right from the start, because it gave him and I time to talk about what we wanted to do for the district and time to just, you know, get through what we were getting through. Because I had made a commitment that I took seriously, and I had to do it. And there was something to focus on other than myself and my problems, because that's what I was doing. I was cutting way down on my meetings at the time, and then this came along. And right before that, I was at a meeting that I think I've been to once in my life. It was a daytime meeting. I rarely get to daytime meetings. And so I was talking to a guy there who's no longer with us, Bob Kay. And another good example, because he had diabetes, and every now and then you'd see him. You know, he was having more and more amputated, and it was very sad. And of course, he eventually passed away from that disease. But you'd never know from his attitude, by the way. He was always smiling. And my sponsor knew him a lot better than I did. But anyway, at that particular meeting, he just told me, after I told him a little bit about what was going on, you know, he listened very nicely. But he was one of those that, he was a really nice man, but he will tell you what he really thinks you should do. Because he was a, kind of an old timer. But anyway, so he said, you got to get to more meetings, and you got to do something for AA other than just get to meetings. And then this DCM, alternate DCM thing came about. So now I'm starting to get some gratitude for the people that are, you know, working with me, kind of starting to guide me a little bit. But, you know, at that first election meeting that I got the alternate DCM, you know, I had no idea what to expect. It was some kind of business meeting as far as I knew. And all the business meetings I'd been to were different than that. Everybody was laughing and having a good time. I'm like, I don't know what everybody thinks so funny, because it wasn't to me. And most of the service meetings I've been to since are that way. You know, doesn't mean tempers don't flare and things don't happen, but also doesn't mean that you walk out shaking the guy's hand that you were disagreeing with an hour before. But so this guy, Randy, my sponsor, and I, we started working on this inactive district. Like I said, it gave me something to do to get out of myself. And we started doing what you do with an inactive district. Just going to the meetings, trying to get people to come to your district meeting. So we set a date and time for the first one, and then we had that, and we tried to get people there. So that's what we did. And that worked for me. You know, I was starting to feel a little bit better because at least I had something to focus on that was productive, even if nobody showed up, which did happen sometimes. You know, you got your whole meeting set up and maybe nobody comes, maybe one or two, maybe ten, who knows. But we were there. We were always there. So what this kind of service has done for me is a lot of things. It was getting me out of myself. It was getting me feeling a little bit more comfortable in doing some service jobs that required some leadership roles, you know, DCM, alternate DCM, you know. And that I didn't really want those kind of jobs. I really still don't want jobs that involve any kind of leadership, really, because I'd rather stay in the background. I'm treasurer for our area right now, and that's mostly a background position, except when you're presenting the proposed budget for next year. But you're not really running anything, you know. But once you learn how to do some of these things, you know, you've got people telling you you need to do more things that you don't necessarily want to do. But it's been a lot of learning because, you know, it just teaches you how to. I mean, if you want to get people to come to your meeting, you better be ready if they do, or they won't come back. You know, so you better have an agenda and just the things you do. And have things where they you know, there's some learning, you know, whether it's reading out of the service manual, whatever it is. But I didn't have to do it at first, you know, I was just the alternate, so he did it, mostly. And I watched. And then, you know, when his 2 years were up, then I became DCM. Didn't really want it, but, you know. But these are some of the people that, you know, and there's been several others. You know, there's some here in this audience today that have done service work for years and years with an attitude that I sometimes just quite honestly don't know how people can have such a great attitude all the time. Unless they don't, they're just plastering on a smile, because that's what I do sometimes, you know. It's pretty amazing to me what people do sometimes. I mean, but so anyway, I went on from that, and then you're kind of stuck. Like I said, once you know how to do stuff, you don't have to, but you know, there are other service positions that, you know, committee chairs and so forth. You know, I see everybody else giving all this back to AA, and I'm just kind of feeling guilty. So, but then things started to change somewhat, you know, because, you know, when you're doing service work with some of the same people for several years, you develop some pretty good friendships. That's been a big for me, because mostly I'm usually a fairly private person. I'm just not that outgoing. Why I ever got in sales as a living, I have no idea. I don't know. I swear to God, I still think about that. I don't know how that happened. I'm not a natural. I have to work really hard. So you get to know people over a period of years, and then people that are really willing to help you with your job, you know, helped us put on our district meetings. They helped us start the committee that we started and helped us keep some of these things going. All you have to do is ask. People are all over it if you just ask them. So I began to learn, you know, to actually have a little bit of a different attitude about some of the service work as time went on, just because of all these people helping us out, you know, instead of just being there, you know, trying to do it for, you know, for for the right reasons. I do know that lately, or we have our area elections coming up real soon, and our immediate past delegate, I wonder if she's here, I don't think so, is in charge of a nominating committee for this election. So at the last assembly, she was kind of hitting me up, you know, what am I going to be running for this time? And I said, maybe nothing. Well, she, you know, she didn't let it go at that. But her point was, well, I said, you know, I may be running for this alternate position. I said, I don't mind doing... So I don't mind doing that, I said, but to tell you the truth, and I told my sponsor the same thing a while ago, I said, I don't know that I really want the position as area chairperson, because now that is more of a leadership position than anything I have ever done. And looking 2 years out, if I even get alternate, and then if I were to get elected, you know, I was telling both of them at different times that I don't know if I want that job. And she said, well, I didn't want it when I got it. I was told, I'm like, dang it. These people have an answer for everything. My friend was saying these past delegates have a secret handbook with all the answers to the objections. I think she's right about that. You have to be a past delegate to get it. Secret book, and they got the answers though, because I never looked at it that way. To tell you the truth, I looked at it more about me than about anybody else at this particular time, and that was exactly her point. You know, she is fairly direct. So she said, "Will you have an answer in a month?" I said, "Yeah, I guess so." But that's the way I sometimes grudgingly, tell you the truth, give back and try to give some gratitude. It's just, fortunately, you know, there's been a lot of good people pulling me along at different times. Good examples. That's been most of the general service work, or service work that I've done has been general service work. You know, I've been secretary. I don't seem to do very good in other types of service work, like sponsorship, for example. I don't seem to feel like I'm very good at that. You know, somebody asked me, I'll do it. The guy asked me, he has 20 years, and he asked me to be his sponsor. I said, yeah, I'll do it. I said, but I'll tell you the truth, my success rate is very low, so you might want to reconsider that. I think he'll be all right, though. Anyway, I think that's about all I have to say. Thanks for sharing. Thank you very much.
And now, please help me welcome Marshall from South Carolina.
Good afternoon. My name is Marshall, and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the Camelback Group in Greenville, South Carolina, and I've been sober all day. You know, when she called Paula to be the first speaker, I sort of had a relief, you know, good, I'm not the first one. And then when she called Sky, I said, damn, I'm going to be the last one. And she was following the list right there. So, and the thing is that, and I usually fall into this. Usually if I'm behind speakers, they said everything I was going to say because Actually, that's how I learned how to get sober. I'm doing everything that everybody told me to do, you know. So this topic about service, gratitude made visible. I was thinking about it, and, you know, God, in my understanding, gave me sobriety. He gave me friendship. He gave me a fellowship. He gave me my family back. He gave me peace of mind. You know, he helped me be comfortable. So if he's all those things, I think for me, service, gratitude made visible, is the God of my understanding. And the reason why I say that is, I remember when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, sobriety by itself is a contradiction to the way that I'm used to living. You know, I was a professional liar, a thief, you know. My world was upside down. And I remember the first meeting I came to, and I already knew that I didn't know anybody there because I went to meetings that weren't near my house. You know, they told me to get away from my area. I heard that thing about places, people, and things. So I picked the area that I didn't know anybody in, so I knew nobody was going to be there. And I walked in and I opened the door. Someone greeted me and said, "Welcome. You know, good to, you know, we're glad that you're here." And, you know, like, sort of directed me around. You know, now I'm an active alcoholic, and this is my first AA meeting. So my past experience is that, like, nobody was welcoming me anywhere, you know. So, you know, you hear some things, 90 meetings, 90 days, get a sponsor, you know, get a home group. You hear things. Another thing that fit into me, I ended up getting a sponsor, and somebody I didn't know. Well, I didn't know him, but then we really didn't know each other. But the thing was is that he looked at me and he told me every morning he gets on his knees and he asks his higher power to help him stay sober for that day. And he goes out and he does whatever he has to do, and at the end of the day, he thanks God for a day of sobriety. And when he did it, he said it and he looked at me like he meant it. So I remembered that, you know. So I started doing that. You know, and I'm going to meetings on a regular basis. And what is happening is, I guess, you know, like you go to a Tuesday meeting, two or three meetings in a row, people started talking to me, you know. And then, you know, so the thing about, the thing about when they're talking to me, they don't know me, but they're talking to me like they got concern and they're interested in how I'm doing, you know. And they start using suggestions. And I don't know what these things are, but they're starting to say these things to me. And they're telling me this thing about the three meetings, you know, the meeting before the meeting, the actual meeting, the meeting after the meeting. And, you know, like if you go to the first meeting, you know, you'll be around, you know, people that are either they're making coffee or they're setting up the hall. But they'll talk about what went on, what's been going on in the week, and how they're doing. You know, you need to hear that stuff. You know, there's the actual meeting, and then the meeting after the meeting is the cleanup meeting. And people will be talking about where they're going to go tomorrow or what they're going to be doing in between now and next Tuesday, you know. And the thing is that when these people would talk to me, they talked to me like they were interested in, like, how I was doing or if I was going to be able to do this, you know. So, you know, and then as it goes on, I guess it's maybe about 9 months later, and I become secretary for my home group. And I have to go down to the central service office and register so our group will get the minutes and then whatever else is happening in that area. Matter of fact, that's Area 30 in Massachusetts. I'm in South Carolina now. I'll get to it. anyway, you know, I'm starting to do things I'm not supposed to be able to do. You know, like if someone says, you know, you're supposed to be here at 8 o'clock, I'm actually on time and making the appointment. You know, but anyway, so I go to the central service office. And of course, I've never been down there before. And I remember opening the door. And I opened the door. I was greeted by a smile that was so warming and comforting, you know. And the smile is like, it's almost like she knows that this smile is warm and comforting to me, you know. And she greets me and says, welcome to, you know, the central service office. What group are you from? You know, and the conversation goes on. But, you know, like I said, not too long ago, I was an active alcoholic. And I didn't walk into too many people's house for the first time and was greeted by a warm smile, you know. So, you know, and then as time goes on, I'm showing up on a regular basis, you know. I'm coming to meetings on a regular basis, and more people are talking to me. And one person invites me to a corrections meeting. And, you know, so, you know, I go. Well, it's about the third meeting, the third time. And we go to the meeting. He's asking me, you know, well, what do you think about it? How's it doing? And I told him, I said, well, I said, there's not too many things I understand about it. But, you know, I said, it's keeping me sober. You know, I'm still new. So what happens is when the fourth meeting is going to happen, he calls me. And he tells me that there's something he has to do. He said, well, would you go to the meeting and bring the report back to the, you know, to the district meeting? So I told him, I said, yeah, I'll go. And that's what I did. And the other thing, too, is so that when I go to the district meeting, they know that this is the, you know, it's just like your home group. You know the new person. You know the person that hasn't done that yet or is getting ready to do that. You also know the person that's just got set up. Yeah. So, you know, we're all, if our first service experience, we're the set-up people, you know. We know what that is, you know. So, you know, so I say, yeah, I'll go. And I go, you know, and I get the report and I bring him back. And he said, you know, so the first time he did that, I gave him the report and he read it. The second time he did that, he said, well, since you went and got the report, why don't you read it? And so I did read it. And then the next thing that happens is that maybe two more meetings go by. The third meeting says, Marshall, since you've been going down and getting the meetings, why don't you be the rep for corrections? So I said, okay, you know. And but the thing is that, you know, like you walk into these new places, and you know, the first thing in service was, you know, GSR, being at the district meeting, the area assemblies, the business meeting at your home group. I've never been in that kind of position before. Matter of fact, I've been ducking and dodging reality for all my life, you know. And there are people that, but when they're talking to me like, you know, like there's a concern. They want me to understand. They're trying to explain. So it goes on. What is happening is that, I don't know, maybe 2 years later or whatever the time is that you start realizing that you're doing things that people were doing to you to the new person. You know? Now you're doing it, you know? Get a big book. Do you have a sponsor? You know? Do you have a home group? You know, do you have telephone numbers? You know, you're doing this stuff over and over again. So that's why, service, gratitude made visible. There's something else I heard at a meeting. It was that God speaks to me through other people. Okay? And what has been happening to me is that my sobriety is definitely a result of the alcoholics who are around me. Okay? I think I pay attention. And I've always wanted to be a free spirit. So the thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is that this thing about where we're free, where we freely give what we receive, you know, we freely share. You know, I'm at a meeting and I'm watching someone and they seem to be at peace with themselves. Well, I'm interested in how they're doing that. You know, what it is that they're doing. You know, so they, you know, they'll share with me their experience. You know, and I also, then I'll be at another meeting and I see that a lot of people like being around, surrounded by this one person. This person is surrounded by people, and they're always talking to him. They act like they trust him. Well, I want to know what it is that he's doing that makes them trust him, you know? Or I see another person, and that you hear that everybody talks about like you know you can depend on this person. Well, I want to know what it is that makes this person so dependable, you know? Where did he get this stuff from? You know, where is he hearing this stuff from? And as it goes on, I realize I keep asking these questions, and I'm getting the same answers. Our program of recovery, a power greater than ourselves, and don't drink one day at a time is always the answer, and it's over and over and over. So, service, gratitude made visible? Yes. You know, and it's in this room. Matter of fact, it's an honor and privilege to be here in front of you today. You know, matter of fact, my sobriety date is March 1st, 1993. And there is no way that I, you know, you stop drinking and you know, like, well, how am I going to have fun? How am I going to do this? How am I going to do that? Well, the last one, and while I was in that frame of mind, the last thing I was thinking about is when Alcoholics Anonymous is celebrating its 75th anniversary, that I would be in a room with other recovering alcoholics sharing my experience, strength, and hope with them. I want to thank you for that. I'm finished.
Thank you all so much. I got a little letter that said I could talk for like a couple minutes, so I'm going to take that opportunity. I want to share a little story about my service in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I was 4 months sober, I got out of a correctional facility, and I found my first home group. And right before I was about to make 6 months sober, I had a girl point to me, and I was about five rows back. She's like, hey, you, didn't you just join this home group? And I'm like, yeah. And she goes, are you 6 months sober? And I was like, almost 6 months sober. And she said, you need to take this secretary position because I have two and that's too many. And it was Monday through Friday and noon meeting. So I started showing up at that meeting for my service commitment. And I started showing up for that meeting Monday through Friday at 11:30 in the morning. And I would stay until 1:15 p.m. And I knew that during that time of the day that I was going to be okay. I knew that. I took my service commitment very, very seriously, that this was a commitment. And I'm so grateful for the example that I was given that was in my home group from the very beginning, other meetings that I attend. So I'm about 15 months sober, and I hear somebody come to my meeting talking about a GSR. And I'm like, well, how come we don't have a GSR at my meeting? So I call up my sponsor, and I say, you know, grumble, 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 we don't have a GSR in my meeting. He's just like, well, I have a great idea for you. Why don't you guys hold an election, and then you can stand for GSR. So we did. We had the DCM come on out to our home group. They held a third legacy election. There was no third legacy because I was the only one who stood for the position. So I became a GSR at 15 months of sobriety. And from then until now, my first area assembly was in September of 2000. And from then till now, I have not missed an area assembly in my area. And general service is just huge for me. I remember going to my first assembly, sitting on these hard benches in non-air conditioned in the summer. It was hot. I was sweating. I'm like, what are they talking about up there? I had my DCM and the GSRs tell me what was going on, break it down to me, give me a service manual. And they were that example for me. Now when I go to an assembly, and for many, many years it's been like this, when I show up in an area assembly, I feel the presence of a loving God as He expresses Himself in our group conscience every single time. And I just cringe, and I'm so devastated when I hear people talking about that's a bunch of arguing, because it's not. And I may be preaching to the choir here. However, I want to tell you that I've had, not only have I had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, but I have been rocketed into the fourth dimension because of the traditions and the concepts of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am so incredibly grateful for my life today. I am not supposed to be here. And I know that. Jails, institutions, and death, that's where I'm supposed to be. And I know without a shadow of a doubt that my higher power places me in these positions to be of love and service. And I get to be of love and service to Alcoholics Anonymous. I get to be of love and service today at my job. Because today, because of you, I'm employable. I get to be in love and service to my husband and my family because of you. And I'm just so incredibly grateful. And I just wanted to tell you that being here is the biggest thrill of my life. And I've never been to an international. So incredibly grateful for you.